Hartsville, the North Monolith, there was a lot of sturgeon. And with that came a series of emails about fish eating or Stellar's eating sturgeon, etc. And I got a request from Rick to have an after-action report, basically a discussion, which this is. I was hoping we could have done it after FPOM, but Rick couldn't make it, so based on everybody's schedule, this was the time that we had chosen. I guess a lesson learned here is communication. You know, part of FPOM is, a big part of that is good, clear communication. I think I apologize that I think we failed there, and a lot of emails went around. I was informed by Dave Wills by a phone call that there was an issue with a high number of sturgeon and some possible predation, and that's when I, the next day, was lucky enough, Robert was on in his office, and I asked him if he had some good observational data, so I kind of put that out there, and that's how a lot of you guys saw that and came full circle to where we are today. I'd like to see a brief agenda. What we would probably, the best thing to do is if Ben could give his event report, and then Robert could follow up with some of his data, and then we could just have an open discussion. Does that sound pretty good for everybody? Okay. So with that, I guess make sure everybody signed in, and we'll just do a little round robin introduction. I'm Bernard Clatt. I'm the chair of one of the co-chairs of FPOM at the Portland District Corps of Engineers.
Tammy Mackey, Burns assistant.
Mayor Frederick, no fisheries.
No chief of fisheries anymore.
Formerly known as the chief of fisheries.
Formerly.
Just assistant to the chief.
I'm Ben Hausman, biologist at Bonneville.
Bjorn Vanderloo, fish biologist, fisheries field unit.
I'm Scott Federal, BPA.
Robert Stansel, Corps of Engineers.
Rick Kruger, ODF&W.
Olaf Langness, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Ian Stevenson, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Doug Hatch, Critvic.
John Whitaker, Critvic.
Ed Mine, National Marine Fisheries Service.
So do we have some handouts on top of
there should be some
extras.
I don't know where they got stuck.
Okay, so there is one handout.
Oh, they're stuck underneath.
So basically, what I'd like to come out of this meeting is acknowledgement of what occurred, possible tasks or action items, path forward, reviewing the minimum, reviewing some of our dewatering protocols and getting a communication plan attached to that. I think the best way to do that would be a task group, as Ben had requested previously at FPOM. I mean, it's getting to the point now where it seems that every dewatering, there's lots of numbers of fish, and it's not going to get lower. It's probably going to get higher. And I guess our best assumption is anytime there's water, there's going to be fish, and if there's going to be fish, assume for the biggest amount, the highest quantity you've ever seen, and we're going to have to plan for that. It's not the first time. It's not going to be the last time. And in this past 6 months, we've had fairly more frequent occurrences of large numbers of fish and issues that go with that. So with that, Ben, if you want to go ahead and give your brief on the event.
Sure. So Washington Shore came down for maintenance this year, the ladder. December, I don't remember the date exactly. Actually, it was the date of FPOM. In December, we did the south end of the collection channel and got 1,000 sturgeon out. Those were removed in one day, so it's pretty quick. That was a pretty small section of ladder compared to what we did this week, the 24th, probably a quarter versus three quarters, something like that, as far as space goes. Yeah.
Did you have sea lions? Was there anything out there at that time? The first time, did you guys see what, one, two?
We didn't have observers out there until January.
Did anybody have any estimates at that time?
Nobody reported anything unusual. There were stellars out there, but nobody reported anything.
That time of year.
Yeah, probably the numbers weren't quite as high.
Single digits, yeah.
Okay.
No.
Talk about that later.
So this dewatering started, at least as far as the salvage goes, on Tuesday the 25th in the afternoon. Did it all afternoon, Tuesday, all day, Wednesday, all day, Thursday, and just a little bit on the morning of Friday. On Wednesday afternoon, for a total of around 1,700 was what was moved altogether. Wednesday afternoon, around 4, I got a call from the rigging crew, the clearance holder for that project overseeing the salvage, who said he thought there were higher than normal sea lion presence. So I happened to have just had a safety talk and whatnot, BRZ permit stuff for Robin Brown and Steve Jeffries from the States. So I knew they were there. I called them and asked if they could perhaps provide a little hazing the next day. They said sure. Showed up on Thursday. Robin was on the 55 deck, tail race deck, and I think he said he shot 3 cracker shells the time he was there. I don't think, from our perspective, as far as what was needing to be communicated, I don't know what I would communicate. I mean, after the fact, it was a huge uproar, and it was, the emails were ridiculous, actually. But from my perspective, had the email chain not gone around, it would have been in our weekly report as salvage 1,700 fish, period. I mean, there's probably a little bit of stuff you can see here from Robert's data that account for what our riggers saw and what we did as far as getting a hazer there. But I think in general it was drastically blown out of proportion.
It does look like there was a elevated take, though, from Robert's report. He said that between 1,300 and 1,700, we observed 44 sturgeon caught up RS2, which is the highest rate we have seen. I don't know, seen this year?
Yeah.
Ever?
This year. I haven't compared it to anything.
Well, that doesn't mean a whole lot.
Though. Were there more eyes on it this time?
No. It's
the uniform monitor.
It's, yeah, everything being equal, so you can kind of see the day before when they started releasing them, there is in yellow. And, you know, there was virtually no take going on there. The morning, there was typical low levels. And it was somewhat high, but not absurdly high, you know.
We have you had another day with 122 take on
right.
The 11th of January, which is well before this account.
Right. So there have been days with more fish, actually 2 or 3 other days. With.
This wasn't like, oh, my God, this is
right.
Way out of the proportion
right.
Of what the rate was higher
yeah,
for
that,
a period of
that.
Time.
And
that was
the key.
The overall day take was within some of the other.
Right, not unexceptional. And if you look the second column there, in blue is the number of sea lions present at the end of each hour. So that did rise. So I get the feeling we had an influx of an additional, you know, half a dozen animals that came in. Maybe they came from downstream a little bit hungry and took advantage. Yeah.
Are you coming at night these days?
Not yet.
Still you see any effect of the hazing?
No.
Robin said actually the first shot was just to show that it had kind of what the
make sure that it
sound like. Yeah. And the others, I don't even know if he was shooting that animal or not.
I don't know.
There wasn't a lot out there.
Couldn't be very effective with just 3 shots.
There was really nothing to haze. I mean, it was the next morning, and, you know, we've got some totals there, but there weren't a lot of animals consistently up in close. And if you look at the zones, too, zone 3 was where they were dropping the fish, you know, right close in there, you know, they dropped them. 9 fish were taken there. 17 were taken in zone 5, which is down
further down
in the middle.
Yeah, well, that brings me, I was kind of wondering about the condition of these fish, too. Those pictures you sent out, I was looking at the water in those pictures, I'm wondering, fish in that kind of muddy water for very long is bound to get sort of gills bound up with debris and stuff. So I'm wondering what.
We didn't see any floating or anything like that out there because I guess we'll report things like that. But you know,
there's this report, a Waker report of floating fish downstream. I don't know what the deal was with that.
I don't know if anybody's actually gotten out there. I know I saw emails about somebody who's going to go out. If you guys, I think it was Critfic, was going to go try to get a peek at it.
Was
yeah, people in the water.
Was that after they gilded it?
Well, I think that might have been after Unit 1 came on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unit 1 came on, and I'm sure we followed the slow roll procedure, but, I mean, that's a potential.
We saw a few fish.
We saw three.
Three sturgeon come up.
And that was recorded by our observers.
You were there, or somebody was there when they brought that unit up.
We wrote down exact times and everything, then passed that information on to Houseman.
What size were those fish?
Between 4 and 5 feet.
Because they were
this, three total.
What was his name? Heikerman?
Heiker.
What was Tim Heiker? He was saying the ones he saw were oversized.
Yeah, it sounded like those were big fish. Yeah. Who knows what was the cause of it? But yeah. And you know, those are kind of anecdotal. You know what I mean?
And ours are estimates too. You know, we're looking at binoculars and just kind of guessing.
Just a lot of little pieces here. And I don't know. The Heiker report was that after was that
it was well after,
7th,
it was well after this
days after.
The Heuker,
it was like a week.
This was last week, yeah. The Heuker, I'm assuming, that's like I said, I wouldn't put much credence on that, but these guys saw fish floated from the start of the Unit 1, those three fish. I don't know if Heuker saw the same thing.
I don't know. Just seeing dead fish floating downstream.
Well, the thing
that happens,
actually, they weren't dead, they were live, but they were bloated, like they had a bunch of air in their bellies, what you were saying.
That's happened before with the unit startup. I would attribute that to the startup of Unit 1. I mean, Okay. Everything's getting slow rolled start, but that's just an improvement. That's
see
not
bloated,
going to stop
bloated,
it. You see them bloated, and
they come up from the bottom to the top when you pull them up with the winch. When you're doing oversized sturgeon, sometimes they'll bloat like that, and you just squeeze them and the air up they go. So they may have been coming down from depth up too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was described, yeah.
60 feet. That's all it takes.
What does the 1700 compare previous years?
It's the most we've salvaged ever to date. But I would expect it to be that way.
Yeah, since I've been in my position 3 years, the numbers have just gone up.
Well,
every time.
The other thing is it was open to tailwater for...
Yes.
I don't know how long, but quite a period of time.
The
collection channel, and therefore the ladder was, yeah. So they could go in and out at will.
Yeah, sure. This is for weeks? So 6 weeks or something?
Yeah.
That ladder's been down. So they may have should have dropped a soft log or something.
Well, we can't really purge FPP.
No, but something we need to consider as our things that we may want to look at the future.
Right.
Sure. To drop them in and purposely trap whatever's in there. But not allow the next
fish
to come through.
Well, we don't know if we're letting fish out or if we're letting fish in. Well, if they're going in and the ladder's running, they might like that better and just be in there. So.
Right, and so that's where I was thinking we may need to finally outfit the ladder with the protection system allows you to tell.
Sure.
I think you need to know what's in there before you do that,
That would
be good. Put a roof or something in there to find out because you don't want to trap 1,000
fish. Well, we need to put transducers in the entrance and know what we got coming in. You're not seeing the ladder.
Or something.
Right, you're not seeing them at the window, per se.
They're down in the lower section, but
so on the entrance,
I don't know if your transducer is going to tell you much, maybe.
Well, there's got to be a way we can get a signal that tells you how many are coming in. Which targets, these are big enough targets.
You might be able to do it when you dewater, and put it in these open slots and then just
detect.
You
have fish that are doing this.
Yeah.
In front of that signal, you need
two transducers to get direction.
Direction. You'll have to do that, but even that, if you have a lot of movement of fish, they're just...
And you will get that. You're right.
What we don't know is when they start going in there. Is this a routine thing now, or is it when you start eating cracker shells, all of a sudden you get a huge influx, or is it when the sea lions and larger numbers...
They're not using any cracker shells or anything out there. They haven't started any hazing.
Okay.
Well, I imagine it's the sea lions are pushing them around.
But five years ago,
there were none. I mean, going out with you guys. Well, at this time of the year, were there how many
stars? I hadn't seen a single one in 10 years of elk. And all of a sudden, the last 5 years, holy.
Yeah.
We've gone from a couple hundred to 500 to 1,000 to 1,700.
Well, Bjorn's done a lot of work on the Columbia, and Parcells says they move upstream during the winter.
We don't seem to have there's not good coverage on lower Columbia for sturgeon movements, so. Olaf might be able to tell you more. I mean, some of the stuff that I've done in the past show that
general upstream movement in the fall and then returning downstream in the spring. So that kind of could make Bonneville kind of an overwintering area, which makes sense with the pure numbers that you see up there.
We had those 8 or so white sturgeon that got acoustic tagged that 1 year, and they were picked up by people's receivers, but we haven't had a chance to really analyze that data. We just got that data from folks, and so that isn't very useful at this point to be able to describe things. There's so few, and it's only in oversized sturgeon, so I'm not sure it's reflective of what the whole population is doing on a yearly basis down there. There has been some recommendations, I know, by the ISRP for the Bonneville Power Administration contract to include maybe something that would talk about putting more acoustic tags in these fish to get better understanding of their movements in and out of not only the BRZ and all, but also further out and into the ocean and how much time you spend out there. From our PID tag information, I don't think we have enough ability to distinguish patterns over years. We usually are collecting them all at one particular time and scanning the fish as we bring them on board. We're not having a barrier in which they're going through. As that said, I'm not sure that there's a significant number of PID tag fish either to be able to detect them by PID tag at the ladder area. If that's possible.
Could we consider tagging all 1,700 next year? The tags only $2 a piece, and if you already got your hands on them, you just boom, you're in. Super easy, and then we
four days to just quickly release them.
Yeah, I'm thinking the water conditions and all that, you got to be sterile.
But I know what you're saying.
Or a handful of them, at least.
It's an easy take on a sturgeon. They're fast as blink an eye, you got one in. Preloaded needle, boom, you're in.
Or at least some sub-sample, no. Maybe not every one of them.
You might want to do them all. I mean, it's not that many. Tags are $2 a piece. And you already got them handling. The hardest part is getting the fish.
Yeah.
And if you already got the letters with the detectors in
which tags are you talking about?
Pit tags would be $2 a piece. Acoustics
would be why you want to have pits anyway.
Where do we have the antennas and the ladders?
Entrance.
Above, you'd have to have them at near the entrance, basically.
It'd be better off on the lower one.
That would make sense. That would show you a trend over time of when the fish are actually moving in there.
That's what I'm looking for. These are fish that go in there.
Yeah, but you
have to Yeah, I would think that the states would have enough to have detectors down the show trend.
I think there probably might be enough, but the problem, like I said, is that typically what we're trying to monitor them is just purely upon recapture and then looking for individual fish, and so we aren't using them in the sense of tracking their movements by pit tag. But like if it's technically feasible to have pit tag detectors lower down in the ladder system there, and might be able to at least experiment to see if we can pick up anything there. That's a possibility. And I'd have to check to see how many fish we think we actually have at large that are pit tagged. But for the most part, earlier tagging work in the lower Columbia River has focused mostly on marks and external tags, and pit tagging down there has not been as extensive as like what we've done up in the reservoirs like Bonneville, the Dallas, and John Day.
There's at least 600 oversized that are tagged down there. I mean, the Long Web does at least 60 here.
Your Floyd tags that you're putting in the pectoral, not the pectoral, the dorsal fin area, those mostly tagged out of Astoria?
Mostly, yeah.
There's a handful of those in the Bonneville. Yeah, fish ladder, yeah.
Okay.
And were those recorded?
So no. Just get them out of there.
I mean, they're on the fish still.
Yeah, they're still with the fish.
Because I was thinking that too, is just put some sort of visual Floyd tags, spaghetti tags, et cetera, on a lot of these fish to see if are they the same fish that are coming back every year and getting into the fish. I don't know what that would tell us.
What's the point, though?
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm wondering is what are we going to do about the issue? I mean, Ben's got an issue. You need to know how many fish are in there. Can you throw a gate in as soon as you take the ladder down? Can you put gates in with a fine trash rack with some sort of a one-way door to let fish out but not back in? You can fight it or something like that. No, it's possible. Or you could, you know, I mean, there are few enough in there, you just leave them in there until you like, salvage them, but not get more in. If they're already in there, then it doesn't really make a lot of sense. They need to have some way of getting them out before you take the water down. But looking at that salvage situation, that was ridiculous. Way too many fish, the water was too muddy, and you've got sea lions to take care of.
Why do we always put them in the forebay? I mean, the tail race.
Well, if they're coming in from, you know, we separate out the stocks by reservoirs, primarily because there is not a lot of upward movement of the fish. There is some movement downriver, but for the most part, whatever probably came in to, you know, the turbines and area and that ladders and stuff, that's all below Bonneville stock. So in the sense of putting it back below Bonneville makes at least some sense in that you're not putting them somewhere where they didn't come from. However, that being said, they may make their way back down, you know, that, and it's probably not that big of a deal if we're talking about small numbers of fish. But I wouldn't want to, you know, my concern would be more if you, how you put them back, where do you put them back? What can you do to control any of this sea lion predation thing on top of the stress of moving them? So I think, you know, from our perspective, we're kind of concerned more about the condition of the fish as they go back, the protocol, you know, of handling them, how they get handled. Is there a way that we can, again, like prevent them getting into places you don't want?
That's the first thing.
That's kind of the first thing. But then also, is your protocol adequate to get them back out and maybe somehow avoid that? Maybe it involves some intense harassment effort on the sea lions that are up there, even if it's just a few, that try to keep them away. Maybe that's part of the solution. Maybe there's something more technical about transporting them. The main concern is you got a stressed fish being put out there in front of a predator potentially, and so that's not a very good situation. So that's we need to kind of get around that as best we can.
I'd like to think, put some thought into how we can get those fish out of there before we take the water out. If we can't keep them from getting in first, I mean, you can check that, but then if they are in there, then how do you get them out before you drop them? Is there sound?
Are you opposed to electricity?
Smell, sense? Is there electricity? That time of the year.
We know there's sensitivity towards electricity.
Well, you got to be careful with big fish. Little fish may not go with big fish.
No, the big fish were the easiest ones to get because they're big.
I know. I know. That's what I'm worried about. You get a lot of little fish.
Right. Well, Parsley also brought up something about, wasn't he looking at some other kind of repellent that was non-electric scent.
Yeah, I think he had thought of that, but I don't remember where it was exactly.
I mean,
fluoride. They're pretty sensitive to that. Or you know, bubbles, you know, is there a lot of boat back and forth in there with a chain behind it?
You blow up a sea lion, run it up from the top down.
You know, put an orca in there, whatever. You know, I mean, is there something that we could use to get these fish to move out just before you take
That's really what I was asking for with the task group, is just folks to start helping us.
That's what makes sense to me right now. I mean, that's the issue, is Bonneville. It's getting fish out of it. I mean, maybe you want to get into turbines and everything else, but it sounds like the purpose of this is to deal with this particular problem right now.
And something I contemplated when we were playing with Smith Root is you would lay electrodes on the bottom and just have fireman sequence down.
And just move them on out. You do it with bubbles too, if it would work. I mean, get away from the electric.
Bubbles a lot harder.
It is. I just don't know how effective it would be. Or putting all that flow is going towards the exits or the entrances. In this case, or the exits.
Right, but they're holding.
If you had a scent in there and it was coming from up above, that could also force them down. It's electric is fine as long as it doesn't kill things.
We need to have this task group to work on this, because we're not going to solve it today.
No. But I want to make sure that people focus on the issue, on that issue, I think. how to get them out of there, how to keep them from going in too, but then counting them once they're in to know what you have, and if you need to go through some more drastic measures or not, or if you can just go ahead and salvage. But I think you want to not have to salvage. That's what you want. That should be your number one goal.
Well, 5 years ago, we didn't have any. So, I mean, something.
I know, but it's changed, Scott. Lots of things changed out there. We've seen sturgeon balls. We've seen sturgeon hanging out in the corner collector. We've just seen things change in the last few years that doesn't really reflect the fact of the population's taking. Whatever. But they're there. They're there. That's the fact of the matter.
Is there any way we can take CRFM funds towards it? And make it actually finally have.
That's a core, core question.
It normally doesn't because it's not outside.
You don't see, unless it's you're building something new, it's really a more of an OM issue.
Well, as far as some research to put in the transit search to see if we compare where they are, possibly putting in the electric rate to test if you could make them go down river and get them on the ground.
Well, you know.
They know how to do that.
Actually, don't say anything.
But those are the things that, you know, I was considering if we can get electrified draft tube to something we could turn on and off the field while the turbine's still on.
But you still want to stun. You got to be careful with that.
But
that kind of thing, if we could have that in the draft tube, turn it on when the unit's still running, then have the unit come down and you have, it's unappealing for fish to approach. There's no selectivity necessary because no fish need to be in there. And that does away with the floating fish that we've had recently. Because that's right now we're doing the best we can. We slow roll, but that's just an improvement. That's not the solution. It's better, but
throw it out there as an option. Remember, you do have winter steelhead, so that's
but they don't need to be in the draft tube.
No, the draft tube's different. I'm thinking more about your water carrier. It's the first problem.
Yep.
And the draft tube is that number two. But in this situation, it is a fishway, so and there will likely be winter steelhead in there. We had pretty good passage this year, 700-800 fish. Past Bonneville this year, so in January.
Yeah.
And they're in there. So that's something we're going to be aware of. I don't want to shock the heck out of those guys.
I've got a question about the floating fish. So what causes them to come to the surface? Are they just caught in the turbine boil and it goes to the surface?
I don't know. I think we get a combination of stuff. I think some of those fish, from what I've seen in the past, when we had done it before the slow roll, it looked to me like they'd made contact with something. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a blade strike or if they're getting pushed into the splitters in the draft tube. Yeah, they look, I mean, they're damaged. They're bleeding out the gills.
Splitters in those draft tubes are vertical and horizontal splitters, so they're pretty complex.
The states actually were downstream, the sea line guys, and actually got some of those on board and looked at them and did some stuff. And there was a lot of strike.
And was this recently or?
Last year.
Last year,
I remember that. That's when you first start those units up, you get a huge.
Well, that was when we came around to the slow roll on that and everything.
And it might be working partly. You've only got three or, our number may be down.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
That's what he's saying. It's an improvement, but it's not the
fix. And that one is where we saw the three fish that you guys saw, I think. That was a unit that has a problem. Unit one that's been tested, so it's off and on. They're slow rolling it every time, but it's still that much more.
As far as the strike and everything goes, the observers are right there. Basically, when they saw those three fish came up, and two looked like they hadn't been touched, like no obvious trauma, and one had a head strike, where there's a noticeable gash. So,
when you guys shut those units down, the blades are ready to use closed completely.
Yes.
Blades flat?
I don't know if blades are flat. But when they slow roll, they tip blades back and forth to kind of scare fish if there's anything up rolling. There, and then they crack and rip gates, and it's, I think.
I'm just wondering if those fish get above the, if they get above.
Those are armor gates. They can't get past the wind gates.
No, but they get above the rudder.
Yep.
Once you just start that, any fish that are in that space there are going to have a time getting down through those blades.
Yep.
And that's why you wiggle on.
Especially if they're flat.
Crack it up. So the first power off is the automated, so it's slower than the second.
It's those guys that don't get the email that are going to get in trouble. Oh, that's big.
with dewatering the ladder, how often do we take it down? I mean,
every other year.
Every other year.
A ladder every year.
But below tailwater, how often do you take it down? Because it doesn't have to go below tailwater every year.
I don't know, I guess. Depends on what's required maintenance-wise.
I mean, that would be the other thing, is we don't take it down. You know, we do more ROV inspections there. you know, we only take it down every, you know, maybe every third year or something like that below tailwater, and then that ladder designated for that needs to be, maybe we do it as early as we can so the sea lions aren't there.
Right.
And
that's the kind of stuff I want us to consider,
just
where we
move it up,
do things with divers so we don't dewater, whether we take it out of season so we don't run into the wintertime aggregations, just anything to get around it.
Maybe. Yeah.
But I don't know what's best or what people would agree to, but that's the kind of stuff I just wanted folks to...
Yeah, you know, something like that, change our operations so we don't... So
this one had to come down for what it's worth. There were several diffusers that were broken, so they had to go.
Oh, that's usually what it is. You got enough things add up that you have to take it down below tailwater to get it.
Yeah, they wouldn't take it below tailwater just for the hell of it.
Just for
right.
Inspection.
So this is
no,
because
it'll get inspected ROV-wise twice a year.
Too,
yeah.
So what is the usual months that you try to do that?
December, January,
December,
February.
January, February.
That's the winter maintenance season for Bonneville.
Does that differ, just for my information, does that differ for the other projects as
it
well?
It does differ as you go upriver.
We adjusted it if needed if there's a special project, but in general, that's the whole season.
So do the other projects upstream start later?
Or just pass it?
The Dalles and John Day are December through February. You said the Dalles and John Day are also December through February.
But they're not seeing sturgeon, you only have some of the
They
tailors.
Did this year at John Day at the north entrance. The report was 30 to 50 sturgeon they pulled out of there.
Which is way more normal.
One of the questions that some of the people I was talking with from our management team was, trying to get an idea of the change in this thing. You talked about that this has increased greatly in the last 5 years, you know, of having fish in there. Do you have any records, maybe something like 10 years back, showing how many you typically have had to remove and salvage? Maybe for, you know, maybe it might be convenient to have it by the, you know, by the units or the whatever, and
the ladder.
Bonneville in particular, but I mean, I think we'd be interested in kind of getting a picture of where, how that might be changing even at some of the other projects like John Day and the Dalles.
So all of that information, all the salvage information, is now available on the FPOM website in the annual reports. Those are all posted, so you can go back and...
From 1 year?
As many as I had, so for 99, starting back at 99 for Bonneville. And the Dalles and John Day, as soon as I get them, I'll post them up there as well.
So it'll still be handy for somebody to condense all that, though.
Yes, but if you wanted to go look at it, you could go do it ahead of time.
I'm not familiar with that website, so I'd have
to. It's TMT, the TMT website.
Okay.
We're on the right under documents.
Tom can show you.
From 95 to 2006, I didn't see a single sturgeon ever. Be a tiny
yeah. It will be a small number. We've had one or two large ones in there, but not like what we've had.
It's super rare. Yep.
Where?
So when we do that dewatering and rescue of sturgeon, we have one tote. Maybe we can double up a tote as the next step. And
are you talking the same type of dewatering? Are you talking going all the way below the tailwater for the...
All the whatever water that was involved in everywhere it's gone up there.
Well, if it's just the ladder, it may be a lot different than doing this, so that's why.
But we're finding in the ladders now. I mean, when you dewater ladders in the pools.
It's different from the time that I've started there. When Tammy was there in the first year I dewatered, I bet we had less than 10.
Even with me down all the way into the hole.
Total.
Yeah, they weren't. They turned around.
Of course, the Oregon flush side, channel, we can flush them out. Flush inside is the problematic side because we cannot flush those.
What does flushing take?
AWS, and we take the fish units out, and once they're out, they're out.
But I'm just seeing how much volume of water. Is that something we could pump in there and flush them? Is it it's a clear water?
Maybe. I mean,
it's ladder flow.
They did move down during the dewatering of the upper section when we just had ladder flow in there, but you run the risk of getting fish in there.
You got to let it open.
At some point, they're not. Are they coming in because it's an attraction flow, or it's because there's no flow? I mean, this one stayed down for 6 weeks with nothing.
It seems to work at A and B branch and maybe Cascades Island because you can do that flushing, whatever you call it. And it seems to work because you pull them out of diffuser pools. Where you first take it down, you see a bunch in there. Then you do this flushing, and then there's a lot fewer. So they do get up and get out, but you've got the entrance right there. At Powerhouse 2, you've got the whole collection channel where they can go through because you have that at Powerhouse 1, too.
But we don't dewater the collection channel at Powerhouse 1 nearly as frequently. I don't even know if we can dewater it at this point.
Be scared, Ken. Oh, there's your
So it sounds like the task group is definitely necessary, and we need to start cracking on some of these options. I think the bottom hanging fruit might be what you just said about shifting the schedule, and in the meantime, maybe get a handle on what these fish are doing, when, and if that means CRFM-funded research or not. I'm sure they're...
It will give you an answer to whether or not there's a time when you can do it before they start moving.
Right.
The other thing it would be nice to know is that when they start moving in, is that the time we need to start slow rolling? Right now we're just kind of guessing when we need to start slow. I mean, there's no data that says, look, they showed up 2 weeks early. Switch your protocol now.
Right.
And so it would be great to have a sense when they start entering ladders that we would do something different in Powerhouse if we could correlate.
Yeah, we started with guest anecdotal dates. We've stretched those dates. We've shrunk the hours that a unit needs to be down to do it every time. So it's just like we keep making adjustments, but it's like you said, it's based on nothing really. I mean, it's based on what we learned as
well. Well, you should be learning as you go.
We are.
But you're finding that they're there all the time.
But we're learning really slow. Point where it's not. There's no way you can learn more than. You're not seeing them at night. You can't physically see them because it's too turbid.
We don't take down the fish weighs, obviously, in the summer, but during turbine units, I don't think you guys see sturgeon in there like you do if you take them down in the winter.
Mm-hmm. We don't, but we do have a pretty good process where we drop tail logs as quick as possible. So they're hanging from the crane as soon as that unit shuts.
One slot first, and then they go to the next
one.
No,
I agree.
They should be going to this slot, then that slot, to get the bottom, because I think they're coming in on the floor.
They do drop. They go bottom with the slugs. Well, that's the guidance.
I agree. In practice, they're
sure.
Not doing it.
But, I mean, you're talking hours versus,
right.
You know,
right.
Days
that's
or weeks or some of the stuff.
When is our next dewatering event? A year from now?
Yeah, we won't be doing anything else. I mean, besides it.
So if we did want to build a second bathtub, if that would help speed the process up, second grain, second truck, cab available.
And bring on painting.
Yeah, that's things that kick around.
So you're not going to dewater until 13?
Not washed.
2013?
Right. Same line.
Unless something serious happens.
And again, then we should take it all the way down.
Well, that would be when they're going to do the land for the massive land.
Oh, that's true. So you would.
That'll dictate.
At least that model, if maybe not the whole bunch.
Yeah, I'm going to put the bulkhead on the north end of the collection channel and do as little as we could.
So, what you would learn in the intervening years with everything running all season is not much if you tank fish, because you wouldn't have it down. You may learn something about it.
You know when they come in and go out.
You won't as if the thing is shut down. That's the issue, that when you shut it down and leave it, that's probably what happened. And those guys took it down early December.
We're finding 500 when we do it right away.
Hmm?
We're finding 1,700 when we leave it down for a while. So there's
right. There's
a ton in there just as soon as you do it.
Yeah, remember in the March time frame and May, when the shad come in there, you see a bunch of sturgeon.
Oh, sure. I see that.
They're getting in there.
Are they going to be in there when you're taking it down in December? That's the question.
Yeah.
I would guess so.
And how many?
Maybe not. It may be a better time than January, but...
like I said, we're seeing this new phenomenon where they're just coming in here. So if you saw less in December but more in January, 3 years apart, doesn't that in itself doesn't tell you a lot. You might have a growing thing anyway.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. Getting money to do a lot of study of tank studies is probably going to be difficult for this.
Well, probably the transducer or some way of knowing when they come in and go out is the first key, is to get a seasonality to when this is occurring, and then maybe a magnitude, and see if there is a period of time. You know, is it if we do any cracker shells, all of a sudden you see it triple? You know,
did
okay. Sure. They probably hit it in the channel, so it's got to aim at the right place.
Yeah, no,
have a big enough area.
You've got to be careful about collecting a massive amount of data.
You have to.
Yeah. Right now we're completely guessing. You know, we take it down to oh shit. Okay. What does oh shit mean? Yeah. 1700?
Well, okay. Yeah. You gotta decide what you're gonna do because you're probably gonna have oh shit no matter what. So I think you'd probably be more likely to try to deal with the oh shit part of it than worry about whether they're gonna be in there or not, because they probably will. And I don't know what you're gonna think about it. We're not gonna say, oh, go ahead, take the hundred down in October.
Well, if you took it down in December, can we go ahead and go and dewater? I don't know if that's possible
right
off the bat.
Right away, if you did it all as quickly as possible.
I think that might be the first thing to do.
It's always a manpower issue.
I don't think it's going to make a big difference, truthfully. I mean, we've done that with Bradford, and you can take it down right away, and you can look at each diffuser pool, which is just loaded with sturgeon. Mm-hmm. That's right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, I think numbers might be different, but it's just a totally different system. That's a collection.
How do we get them out of there? That's what I keep coming back to. There's more. Yeah, they're going to be in there. Accepted. But how do you get them out
That'd be a great assignment for this task group, is to start looking into ways to.
If Smithfield can help us, if that's the way to go about it, that's something to look at. If it's a scent or a sound or lights, bubbles.
Ground up sea lion pellets,
yeah. Just throw stellars in the ground and hold them there on the chain.
Oh, damn it, we're just kidding.
Hang one from the.
Just ignoring.
Don't worry, we're not going to let that happen either.
I do have a question. I mean, I'm all very grateful for any help that we can get for ideas and whatnot, but with regard to this meeting and what should have been done differently and what was done, I'd be curious to know. Because from our perspective, it was a salvage as good as it could have gone. There was no mortality, there was nothing from our perspective, and yet, yeah, we're having this meeting because of it.
Well, first off, we should have gotten a call. Anytime you see 2,000 sturgeon,
we'll be flogged.
I just, I mean, first and foremost, is like if you see that many fish, I mean, that's just an astronomical number. This, and you saw the photos, I was thinking it's going to be more of a small size fish. I saw the sheer number of large fish.
That's the way it's been for years. Well, that shouldn't be news to anybody.
Well, we knew that, but I'm saying, like, I've heard 700. 700 is a bad number, but that's something you guys have had. You've dealt with it and have not seen big problems. 2,000 is almost three times that number, and that's. Well, that gets to be the point of like taking, instead of taking a day or two. Okay, so twice as many now. 2.5 times, 2.5 should we go? Should we get to that gnat's ass? I don't think so. No, I think the point is, if you drop it down, you see that many number of big fish, a call or something like that saying, hey, we got a crap load of big fish, do you want us to proceed as planned, or do you want us to take anything else?
You didn't know how many you had until you basically put them in the bucket and got them out of there. Because it's no dark in that channel. I mean, you know what's in that junction pool where the pictures were.
That was pretty dramatic.
That's pretty dramatic.
Well, yeah, sure. You've got a lot. But
if you think there's
that many in the photos right there, that was less than 500.
If you see that many there, you're thinking, oh, crap. If there's that many there, there's probably more elsewhere. I think like a call or something like, wow, we got a little more shares than we've seen in years past.
Yeah, but when I looked down there, there weren't nearly that many. So, I mean, they're moving around.
Yeah, and that's after they've seen fish down there. So that you got to understand, when you look in there, you'll see a certain amount of fish. That what you see there is not even a tenth of the section that we dewatered.
Right.
So that's, you have no idea what's in that dark channel.
But you had an inkling.
Well, I told everybody in December we had 1,000 fish when we did the south end. Yeah. So I mean, you have to expect that when you do a bigger section of the same ladder, you're going to have that many more.
So
I don't think that should be surprising.
Right. And so, what would we have done? What would be the recommendation?
Well, I think,
that's part of this group
if you have
needs to discuss.
Down there, I didn't realize you had that many sellers. I didn't put two and two together because in December you didn't have that many sellers. I didn't realize we had that many there. At that point, you say like, hey, we got a bunch of sellers there. We're going to put a bunch of sturgeon that are probably going to be not as happy as they have been because we've just been handled. They're going to be probably more likely to basically potentially have an interaction with the sea lion that's not favorable to them. So at that point, say, is there something else? Should we maybe think about calling up Crickfins, get some of their bone hazers out here, and just give them a little bit of a sanctuary? Something along those lines makes a little sense. I think the long-term solution is going to be like Ed had been talking about, like, put in dewater as early as you can. Have ask for volunteers. If we need hazers out there, we need hazers out there. Maybe we set up a criteria for safety. You see more than 10 stellars in a certain area, let's have a hazing crew out there to help us out. Call for volunteers so you have more crew out there. Double up on your tubs. Let's take a look about maybe looking about putting fish somewhere else.
Right.
Maybe you do half the fish in the forebay, half the fish in the tailwater.
Well, we had that discussion earlier. That's forebay is... The forebay was...
That's logistically impossible.
Right now.
So the other thing is, if you do get volunteers, I mean, they have to have certain training now. Fall protection.
Yeah, we don't get volunteers.
To get in the basket and go down in, that's kind of an issue. But yeah, I see your point. And
bigger trucks,
yeah,
take them to
bigger tanks.
I think people need to understand this predation situation.
A barge?
Clearly.
That's the problem.
If you look at this, there weren't stellars sitting there in the zone where we were.
Well, that's what I understand.
Not
it wasn't unusual. There weren't.
I mean,
not drafts. People got excited.
I'm sure some of them were
a bloodbath.
Which
I wish Stuart could have been here, actually.
Which I mean, you know, I mean, the bloodbath thing came from a call from a concerned citizen of the public, you know, and they went through and called every agency around and got our number from who knows who, and you know, you guys were having the EPCOM meeting, and it's like, you know, this is the biggest bloodbath you've ever seen, and the lady was hysterical, you know, and that's when we were like, okay, well, the people we need to talk to are across the hall.
This is the public speaking
came.
From.
And
where were they looking from?
Yeah,
they were on the Washington shore,
looking out across.
Looking
the
probably out there near Powerhouse too.
Down below,
watching
I have no idea.
Get taken by a stellar.
According to a court person, was saying there were 32 sea lions out there,
And they're sending it to multiple agencies. That's just ridiculous. I mean, when I saw this email, I was like, "This is a joke, right?" I mean, spend my time responding to this kind of silliness based on the complaint from the public. It's not.
Well, that's why we're here, because communication is an issue.
That's,
but that's his
right.
communication.
Well,
not
this
our
it's
problem.
All of our communication. We're region.
And that
we work together.
You guys, you had a lot of sturgeon there.
We
releasing
do.
Them. You had stellars interacting. We're getting called from the public. I give you a call.
That's
you guys
the
said,
way it should go.
Well, it should, but we should have gotten a call ahead of time saying, yeah, we're kind of a bit of rodeo here. It's really tough salvage, that kind of stuff. We're having a problem, that kind of stuff. So when we get frantic calls from things, I know what's going on.
I'm not picking on people, but everybody here knows stellars are around all winter long.
Yeah,
you guys should know that.
We do, but
we know that as well.
Yeah, we know, but I'm saying that many numbers, we haven't seen that many over winter this early. We know they show up, but this is one of the first times we've seen
stellars
them.
Or sturgeon?
Stellars.
Oh.
I don't think we've seen 38, 34.
I guess I would just say
that.
That
many. It was 10.
Some of the things that may seem obvious to you, like I haven't seen all these emails, but I just think it doesn't hurt to kind of keep in mind that, you know, public perception, you know, it has an impact, and it's good to get the right information out there. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, I don't know what happened. You know, it's like, okay, so I'm going to go, that's why I came. It's like, oh, just to find out what the big deal is. And it, you know, it sounds like maybe it isn't a big deal, maybe it is, but it's just more, just sort of, you know, I know a number of sturgeon fishermen. You know, there's just a lot of other things that, you know, with the reduction in runs and things like that. And I mean, it affects people, you know, emotionally. I mean, you're familiar with all this with other issues, but it just, I would just maybe caution you that maybe to take it a little more seriously. How things are perceived.
I think from our standpoint, I think from our agency, the people that probably had to address any
public complaints or calls or, you know, response to whatever hits the press. It gets shunted to people like Ann or myself or Brad James or somebody like that. And we're sitting here coming into this meeting kind of a little bit uninformed. Now, maybe that's just because we're not part of the usual loop of communication. But I think in terms of improving communication, I think, you know, there's certain people that need to be included in the loop, because that's where all the phone calls from the public are going to be directed. Region 5 office for our agency, you know, there's got to be certain people that are informed enough to be able to respond to the public or the, you know, with something other than, oh, I didn't know about that. Because that just helps fuel the fire on any speculation on the part of the public. So maybe if there's a way to improve communications within our own agency, that's possible. But I'm not quite sure how our agency is getting that information. Now, maybe there's that means that I need to be looking on websites or keeping myself in the loop better on something else. Maybe, you know, it's our fault, you know, as far as not getting out there to the resources that are available to keep us informed.
And as soon as I like saw, you know, oh, sturgeon, oh, okay, I'm going to forward this to our, you know, our sturgeon guy. Maybe it's something he wants to be involved in, so he sent it all off. But
is there any attempt to write this up and go to the paper and clear up some of the misunderstandings and use the story as, here's the increasing trend we've been seeing over time. We've been able to catch our fish, release them, you know, unharmed.
Yeah. I know our public affairs would jump all over that probably and say, hey.
It's in some ways a good news. It's a good and a bad news story. We understand it. We've taken care of it. We, you know, we've been cleaning them out for the last 5 years very successfully. Unfortunately, we have the huge harvest of stellars taking 100 a day, which, you know, people saw the email, which was kind of alarming. But we're aware that we have systems in place. It's okay.
And we do have some communication plan in place by FPOM, distribution list, and that's where the information should go out of. It's going to go out instead of going around. I mean, I got my email from Russ Kiefer, and that's when I immediately called Robert and said, hey, what's going on with the predation? And he's like, here it is. So I sent that out just to diffuse the situation. But, I mean, it's as an FPOM representative, it's basically your responsibility to bring that news up to your chain in your agency, I feel, or else we would have a giant distribution list.
See, I don't even know who that is. Is that
was you?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't tell
I told Brad. He was supposed to tell you.
That's an issue. I mean, a lot of people in their agencies don't know who their FPOM rep is. Especially.
You, by the way. Yeah.
So, you have to go? I mean, so can we wrap this up with agreement that there's a lot of work to do?
I have a list.
Well, why don't you sum it up in your five bullets?
Okay. There's two issues. One's collection channels, other one's draft tubes. This is for collection channels and ladders. I think you got to assume you're going to have a large number of fish there. Just make that assumption up front. You're going into it. You set up communications with the fishery agencies and saying, hey, we're going in. We don't know what we have. You set up hazing with sea lions ahead of time. Make sure Robin Brown or whoever knows that there may be an issue. We're assuming we don't know how many you have, so you're going to start the operation. Haze the sturgeon out of the channel, and that's something we need to talk about. How do you do that? But let's develop something that works in the next year that we can try. That seems to me to be the best thing to really stop any potential problems, regardless of whether they're sea lion caused or silt in the channel or just handling effects. And then you have to need an action plan, a salvage plan, something that steps through all that process, and then an after action, you know, statement saying, hey, we're great, or whatever. But said enough pointing fingers. I mean, it's time to move on. So I think, you know, if you just have those things in place,
And we spend time in a group coming up with methods to haze sturgeon out of these deep, dark channels. I think that could work for draft tubes, too. But it seems like just a stepwise, you know, one, two, three, four.
I think the other thing we need to do is, since this is becoming an increasing problem with the number of sturgeon in there, is get sturgeon people involved.
You bet. Oh, absolutely.
Sturgeon research and management groups, and they may have some ideas.
People who know something about what sturgeon like and don't like.
Keep them informed.
What I don't want it to turn into is a big sturgeon research project. That goes every which way. I mean, that's nice.
Well, they don't have any money anyway.
You know, I mean, everybody, I know, but they want money.
Right.
That process is kind of hectic enough down there with the number of personnel involved and cranes and various things. Uh-huh. Like having a bunch of researchers down there trying to tag all these fish.
Yeah. Sounds like a nightmare. I don't think you need to do that. I don't think you need to do that. I think maybe knowing what you have, if you can come up with some sort of a camera or some sort of a system that would let you know what's in there ahead of time, Rove. But knowing how turbid it could be this year, we had freshet going on right in the middle of the winter, so you didn't have good viewing conditions.
Yeah, and those fish weren't held in water like that. That's when you start getting people kicking around and fish getting loaded up.
But you get a lot of mud in the bottom, and that's what happens. But you don't want that many fish in that kind of condition for very long, even hours. It's not a good time, not a good thing for fish.
And for what it's worth, just the process, that gets pumped down and salvaged for a day, then it fills back up partially at night, water's clear, or it gets
there's
water
plenty of
in, and then we do it again.
We just don't want to have to do it.
No.
I mean, what I'd like to avoid is handling any sturgeon. So, I mean, that should be the goal. But, making sure everybody knows what's going on, and it could happen, and just assume that they're in there, and they have some method. That's the thing, that's the piece that's missing, is how do you get them out before you dewater? And it seems to me that that's what the sturgeon folks could tell us. Where's Blaine?
Council of the Sturgeon Meeting.
They're all at the
council. Okay.
Yeah. Who's the sturgeon guy?
It's our big day to set seasons on sturgeon.
I got to run another meeting, guys.
I'm excited.
Is anybody else?
State of John Day and Bonneville next.
You want to go? Yeah, Tom, you have anything to add before we close? Fiorno?
No, thank you.
No.
No.
Scott?
I would like to see if you guys would contemplate doing like a one pager or a press release so that we can give it to Washington.
I need to send it up my chain, too.
If you can come up with one.
Our public affairs will. I'll go back and talk with them.
I know they like to jump on things like this.
Yeah.
No, this get the review before it goes out.
Right.
And then I'd also like to put a pitch in for CRFM and see if we can get some study to get a little bit of information on what's going on here. And then possibly also talk to Critfic and see if we could tag some with... you got your sea line arrays still out?
Right.
Yeah. So maybe put some sturgeon and pick the data up through their sea line array or the JSATs.
Mm-hmm. One thing with the acoustic tag things on the sturgeon that we've become a little bit more concerned about is the sound frequency falls within range, at least for harbor seals, just right there. So whether that's an issue, we don't know. I mean, we haven't had a study on that.
So was there range?
Well, I can't remember. I just know that at the time that somebody was reviewing that was the main manner person, they said, well, that's within the range of their hearing capabilities. They knew it for harbor seals. I don't know if they knew about stellar.
You got anything to add? Rick?
Nope.
Olaf? Only one request, I guess, and that is that I think we were looking for what are the process by which you move the fish. I mean, we're unfamiliar. If there's documentation, whether that's online or you have some materials where you have like a protocol or something that or could explain it to us, I think we'd appreciate to know that, to see if there's any room for improvement in that part of it, because assuming we're not going to be able to chase every last one out of there, for the ones that are there, what are the probability of improving that process so that there's less stress on the fish, and as well as any presentation of the fish to stellars or other predators.
I mean, that's maybe one thing
I don't think we ever even touched on like what Robert put together. I mean, maybe I missed that part. I was asleep, but it seems like everyone, there was never any bloodbath necessarily. Mm. I mean, I think Ben touched on that, but it seems like, I don't know where people came up with these numbers in the emails. They're just not
after looking
there.
At that data, I wouldn't have raised a flag and said, oh my gosh, what's going on? If it was more than one data page, so it was like, ooh, you know, that's of interest, but the numbers weren't huge.
Right.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to support you, Ben. I looked at these data, and I don't. Yeah, we had 21 IDs on that day, but but 3 weeks before, we had 16, 18,
you know.
And a couple days after, we had 15, 16. And
I mean, I sat there on the morning of the 27th from 8 until 11 just watching, and Stellars were not near where any of the activity was going on.
They tend to be spooked with those cranes, too, you know, hanging overhead. The Stellars are still a little bit more flighty than California sea lions, so they were staying back. Like I said, the predation wasn't in close, primarily.
Yeah, the frustrating part for us is, had there not been these emails go around, this meeting would have never happened.
But you know, it did happen, and now we have to deal with it. And
I understand, but
this pushes the FPOM task group now, which was kind of it was dragging. So now we can get some traction there and get moving on there. But I do understand what you're saying.
You need an event to convince somebody you need funding,
right?
And here's our event.
Well, if it does that, then it's
let's cap
it.
Well, the glass is always half full.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Dan, do you have anything to add?
The reservoir is always half full.
Doug?
No, I'm good.
Nope. All right. Well, I guess this is wrapped it up. Thanks for coming. And we'll be briefing this out at FPOM. Do you want to have a task group after?
I'll talk to the search people and see if we get the information I want.
Sure. I mean, we're willing to meet at one. Sorry we couldn't accommodate your 5 o'clock request.
Well, it wasn't about it. It was more of what the sturgeon guy said, that they've got 2 sturgeon meetings today. They could make this one.
I hear you.
2 meetings.
Well, Minto. I mean, not Minto, but
Bennett.